ॐ गणेशमिनन्दस्य जलाञ्जनशलकया चक्षुरसमिलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले सायं प्रकदमयं दधति सानन्दिकम् वंशगोपदेवस्य कृपसिन्धुवैः च प्रीतनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. In the second chapter of the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Haranyakashipu, of all people, is lecturing philosophy. Why is he speaking philosophy? He wishes to remove the lamentation, the downcast spirits of his mother Diti and his other relatives due to the death of Haranyaksha. Haranyaksha was killed by Lord Vishnu and everyone was lamenting. So he wanted to explain to them philosophy that would stop their lamentation due to death, because the eternal soul lives and he's already passed to another body. Yet, ironically enough, what is on Haranyakashipu's mind is his enmity to Vishnu due to Lord Vishnu's having killed his brother, Haranyaksha. But yet, despite this, Haranyakashipu is speaking philosophy, proper philosophy, basically, basic proper philosophy. But what his mind is on is something completely different. His mind is on revenge. So this is being told by Sukadev, by Narada Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj, and Shanaka Rishi is hearing that from Suta Goswami, and Sukadeva Goswami is speaking all of that to Maharaj Prickett. And within this story of Haranyakashipu speaking to his relative will come another story, the story of Yamaraj as a young boy. Did we start reading that? I don't know. We did. I'm going to have to go catch up then. And then within that will yet be another story too. Yamaraj will tell another story. So it's really stories inside of stories inside of stories inside of stories inside of stories. So we'll read some verses to catch up. So Haranyakashipu is explaining how everything is in the hands of destiny. Every conditioned soul receives a different type of body according to his work. And when the engagement is finished, the body is finished. Although the spirit soul situated in subtle and gross material bodies is situated in subtle and gross material bodies in different forms of life, he is not bound by them. He is always understood to be completely different from his body. This is Yamaraj speaking at this point. Yamaraj is speaking to the wives of Sujagya, the king, who has just been killed, and his wives are holding tightly onto his body. But he's already gone. So when the engagement is finished between the soul and the body, the spirit soul leaves his gross body behind, and taking, if he's conditioned, he takes his subtle body with him. And that dictates his next gross body, the desires that are situated in the subtle body. We'll read some of Prabhupada, most of Prabhupada's purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. So I'll just read this because he's going to have a reference to something in this verse. So he says, every conditioned soul receives a different type of body. Why? What dictates what type of body we are in, or that we will receive, or that we have received. So every conditioned soul receives a different type of body according to his work, according to his karma, according to what he has done, what desires he has developed, and according to what he deserves, according to his pious or sinful activities, according to his own work, he receives the body. Even though this is done under the supervision, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyate Satchara Charan, it is done under the supervision of the Lord, yet it is according to the work of the individual that dictates his body. Prabhupada's purport. Here it is very plainly explained that God is not responsible for the living entities accepting different types of bodies. One has to accept the body according to law, to the laws of nature and one's own karma. Therefore, the Vedic injunction is that a person engaged in material activities should be given directions by which he can intelligently apply his activities to the service of the Lord to become free from the material bondage of repeated birth and death. Swakamana tab abhyacha siddham vindati manava. So those instructions will teach us how to take our nature, the work born of our nature, and use it in Krishna's service so that the work that we are doing will not bind us further in the material world. Because if we do things with ourselves as the center and don't work for Krishna, then that very work we do, even though it is meant for our own pleasure, becomes the cause of our bondage. So how to use the work born of our nature, and practically speaking, we can't work differently than our nature. How to use that very work that will bind us in such a way that it will liberate us. So Krishna, so that's that verse that Prabhupada's quoting from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Siddham vindati manava or yatta pravitibhutanam yena savamidam tatam swakamana tababhya cha siddham vindati manava. So, but if one follows the nature of his, the work born of his nature, but does that, but learns how to use those prescribed duties as an offering to Krishna, then every man can attain perfection. So these are the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord is always ready to give directions. Indeed, his directions are elaborately given in Bhagavad Gita. If we take advantage of these directions, then in spite of our being conditioned by the laws of material nature, we shall become free to attain our original constitution. Mameva ye papadyante mayam etantrantite. We should have firm faith that the Lord is supreme, and that if we surrender to him, he will take charge of us and indicate how we can get out of material life and return home back to Godhead. Without such surrender, one is obliged to accept a certain type of body according to his karma, sometimes as an animal, sometimes as a demigod, and so on. In other words, one is caught by one's karma and forced to act in a particular way. For how long is this sentence? It goes on, practically speaking, forever. Ateva maya tare samsareta duk. This is what happens as a result of turning our back on Krishna. So we can turn towards Krishna gradually or quickly, but we should turn. An example Yamaraj gives. Just as a householder, although different from the identity of his house, thinks his house to be identical with him, so the conditioned soul, due to ignorance, accepts the body to be himself. Although the body is actually different from the soul, it's like the house is different from the person who owns the house, similarly the soul is different from the body. But when one gets a house, one feels that that's him. And he spends his time decorating his house and fixing it up, working so hard for his house, just like we work to keep our body in a particular fashion. And if something bad happens to the house, we feel pain due to the identification. Although we are not the house, although we are not the body. The body is obtained through a combination of portions of earth, water, and fire. And when the earth, water, and fire are transformed in the course of time, the body is vanquished. The soul has nothing to do with this creation and dissolution of the body. So due to attachment to our body, because we use the body and we plan to use it for enjoyment, it's our hope for enjoyment, and naturally we identify with it. Therefore we have pain, because we want to enjoy the pleasure. And the greatest pain is when the inevitable happens, when the earth and water and fire, etc., that the body is composed of, when it shifts and transforms in course of time, and everyone's course of time is limited on the bodily level. Everyone has its destined time, and there's nothing one can do about it, practically speaking. So yet the soul has nothing to do with this creation and dissolution of the body, because the soul is eternal. So he continues, explaining how the soul is completely different from the body. As fire, another example, as fire, although situated in wood, is perceived to be different from the wood. So fire is within wood, but it's different from the wood. As air, although situated within the mouth and the nostrils, is perceived to be separate. Another example. The air going in and out of the nostrils is separate from the nostrils, within and separate. And as the sky, although all-pervading, never mixes with anything, so the living entity, although now encaged within the material body, of which it is the source, is separate from it. From Prabhupada's purport. As fire appears separate from wood, and as the air flowing through the nostrils and mouth of the body appears separate from the body, so the Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears separate from the living being, but is actually separate and not separate simultaneously. This is the philosophy of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. According to the reactions of karma, the living entity appears separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but actually he is very intimately related with the Lord. Right now, we appear, think ourselves as the body, and we think of ourselves not in relationship to Krishna. This is due to karma. This is due to maya. So consequently, even though we now seem neglected by the Lord, he is actually always alert to our activities. Under all circumstances, therefore, we should simply depend on the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus revive our intimate relationship with him. We must depend upon the authority and control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have a relationship with Krishna. We're individuals, and we have independence, yet we are not separate from him, because nothing is... we are his energy, tatastha shakti, cetragya kyatata para. But yet we appear, feel ourselves, perceive ourselves as separate from him, but yet the relationship is there, but forgotten. So it has to be revived, and then the lonely neglect that we are feeling be removed. And how to do that? Under all circumstances, we should simply depend on the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That will revive our intimate relationship with Him. Depend upon me, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaro. So Yamaraj continues. O lamenters, he's speaking to the wives of the dead king, you are all fools. Mudhayam anuso chatta. You are all fools. You're lamenting. Why is that foolish? The person named Suyagya, for whom you lament, your husband, the dead king, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause of your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you are lamenting. This is contradictory behavior, for you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. So if you think the person is the body, the person that you loved is the body is here, why are you lamenting about it? And if you think that the life has gone, that which you knew and loved, then why are you grasping onto the body? That thing has passed on, the soul has moved on. So there's contradiction in this, that's foolish. So you've actually, if the thing that was lovable and it has gone, the soul is gone, you've never even met that soul. Because you're thinking the thing that you thought was the soul, the life, is the body. So you've never even met the soul, so if you've never met the soul, then why are you lamenting that it's gone? There's no need for your lamentation for the body. You have always seen is lying here. We'll read from the last part of Prabhupada's purport. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, one can understand that the person within the body who is hearing and replying has now gone. Therefore, in effect, the common man concludes that actually the spirit soul was different from the body and has now gone away. Thus, even a common man coming to his senses can know that the real person who was within the body and was hearing and replying was never seen. For that which was never seen, what is the need of lamentation? So the soul is that which brings life to the body. The soul is the one acting through the body. But that soul yet is not all in all. There's something else too. And what is that something else? Yamaraj continues. In the body, the most important substance in the physical body is the life air. But that also is neither the listener nor the speaker. The one who we're talking to when we relate and who we listen to. That's neither the body nor the life air. Beyond even the life air, the soul can also do nothing. And the soul itself is not independent. Beyond even the life air, the soul can also do nothing. For the super soul is actually the director in cooperation with the individual soul. The super soul conducting the activities of the body is different from the body and living force. From the second half of Prabhupada's purport. Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas, or senses, he is not actually the proprietor. For the proprietor, the owner, is called the super soul. Just like we may own a particular house. But legally, the land ultimately belongs to the government. We are a secondary owner. And as long as they grant us the right to own it, then we own the house. But with their superior power, they can come and take it away from us because they are the primary owners. So similarly, the primary owner of the body is not us. It's not even us the body. It's not even us the soul. It is ultimately God, the super soul, the Paramatma, the soul of the soul. We are Atma. Atma means the self. And Krishna is the Paramatma, the supreme self, or the super self, the super soul. Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is the super soul. Consequently, the super soul is called Rishikesha, and the individual soul is advised by the direction of the super soul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Savadamam pratyajam mamekam sharanam raja. Thus he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal blissful life of knowledge. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body. Senses, living force, and the air is within the body, and above him is the super soul, who gives the individual soul all facilities. The individual soul who renders everything to the super soul lives very happily within the body. Continuing. The five material elements, the 10 senses and the mind, all combine to form the various parts of the gross and subtle bodies. The living entity comes in contact with his material bodies, or the high or low, and later gives them up by his personal prowess. This strength can be perceived in a living entity's personal power to possess different types of bodies. So the living entity's power, what is his power in this world? It is to possess and work a body. He works the gross body through the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, and false ego. And then he will give them up too. The second half of Prabhupada's purport. The human form of body is valuable. One can use his body to go to the higher planetary systems, to Pitriloka, or he can remain in this lower planetary system. But if one tries, he can also return home back to Godhead. This prowess is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Super Soul. The power to do this is given by Krishna. Therefore the Lord says, Matas smitir jnanam aponam cha. For me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. If one wants to receive real knowledge from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become free from bondage to repeated acceptance of material bodies. If one takes to the devotional service of the Lord and surrenders unto him, the Lord is prepared to give one directions by which to return home back to Godhead. But if one foolishly wants to keep himself in darkness, he can continue in a life of material existence. So Krishna reciprocates with our desire, so it's so important to desire properly. To have our desire situated as to serve, to surrender to Krishna and to serve him. Surrender and service. Devotional service. As long as the spirit soul is covered by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego, he is bound to the results of his fruitive activities. He gets his karma as long as he has that false ego, that sense of I-ness is separate from Krishna, that sense of I being the enjoyer, then everything he does through the subtle and gross body binds him further in the material activities, in the material world. Because of this covering, the spirit soul is connected with the material energy and must accordingly suffer material conditions and reversals continually, life after life. Purport. The living entity is bound by the subtle body, consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. And there's only one cure for this, and that's surrender to Krishna. The false ego has to go. We have to, if we want to get free from this binding, we have to give up this sense of being an independent enjoyer. This is the most difficult thing. And the manifestation of the sense of false ego is practically the body. We have a false ego. The real ego is we are Krishna's. We are Krishna's servant. False ego is we are the body. I'm this body. I'm the five fingers on my right hand and the five fingers on my left hand. This is me. So the living entity is bound by the subtle body consisting of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the basis of the gross body is the subtle body. And the basis of the subtle body is the false ego. And this false ego, this misuse of our free will, polluted consciousness, real consciousness is a Krishna's servant, but the misuse of our free will perverts the consciousness, reflects it into the material energy, and we develop a false ego, a false sense of identity. So we are bound by this, the subtle body. At the time of death, therefore, the position of the mind becomes the cause for the next body. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyaja yante kalevaram. At the time of death, the mind sets the criteria for the spirit souls being carried to another type of body. If a living being resists the dictation of the mind, oh, and what a resistance that takes. If the living being resists the dictation of the mind, it engages the mind in the loving service of the Lord, the mind cannot degrade him. The duty of all human beings, therefore, is to keep the mind always engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord. Savai mana Krishna pararavindayo. When the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, the intelligence is purified, and then the intelligence gets inspiration from the Supersoul, the Dhammi Buddhiyogam Tam. Thus the living entity makes progress towards liberation from material bondage. He continues, Yamaraj continues. So he's saying that the mind is binding us. It is fruitless to see and talk of the material modes of nature and their resultant so-called happiness and distress as if they were factual. Such strong, cutting preaching. And so, again, how ironic that he's completely acting in an opposite manner to his strong and powerful words, or Hiranyakashipu is. But yet he's speaking proper philosophy. So he's saying here that our conception of happiness and distress, to think it's factual, is useless. It is illusion. When the mind wanders during the day and a man begins to think himself extremely important, or when he dreams at night and sees a beautiful woman enjoying with him, these are merely false dreams. Daydream, nightdream, Prabhupada would say. They're the same. One time someone asked Prabhupada about is a dream important? The meaning of dream, is it important? And that was his response. The daydream, nightdream, it's the same. So neither the daydreaming or the nightdreaming has significance. All have to do with the entanglement of the soul's mind, or not the soul's mind, but the false ego, the mind, and the intelligence, and the gross body, all the impressions in the subtle body of conditioned life, of the modes of material nature. So not factual at all. Illusion, dream. So despite what the dream is, we should be awake to our actual identity. That's what he's saying. So the happiness and distress derived. I'll read a little bit further down. Even if by fruitive activity or worship of the demigods one is elevated to the higher planetary systems for sense enjoyment, his situation is condemned in Bhagavad Gita as antavat, perishable. So we might not be worshippers performing a Vedic karma kandiya, fruit of activities, but we have in our minds different dreams of pleasure. The mind dreams, if I have this, if I don't, if I can remove that. Always dreaming, fantasizing continuously. But even if one attains the most selective and wonderful part of his dreams, he will not be happy because they are all untaught. Perishable, temporary. The happiness one enjoys in this way is like the pleasure of embracing a young woman in a dream. For some time it may be pleasing, but actually the basic principle is false. The mental concoction of happiness and distress in this material world are compared to dreams because of their falseness. All thoughts of obtaining happiness by using the material senses have a false background and therefore have no meaning. So cutting straight through all the illusion of the material world, which means cutting through what we can consider reality in the material world. Therefore it's so necessary to hear philosophy. Those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal whereas the body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. What don't they lament about? If one knows that one is a soul trapped in a material body according to his karma, with certain strengths and certain weaknesses, certain debilities, what is there to lament about? This is just karma. His term of imprisonment in the material world. Accepting that, remembering Krishna, and using whatever opportunities we have according to our karma in Krishna's service. Whether according to our karma we can do little things, or according to our karma we can do big things. It's all karma, but with devotion we should try to use all of that, whatever we have, in Krishna's service. Because if we don't use it in Krishna's service, Maya is going to use it in her service, in the service of illusion. And that will entangle us further. False. All based on a dream. So this is the basic instructions that are given. According to Mamamsaka philosophy, those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal, whereas the body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. They accept whatever circumstances Krishna's mercy. But persons who lack knowledge of self-realization certainly lament, whereas, therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. Purport. According to Mamamsaka philosophy, everything is eternal, nitya. And according to Sankhya philosophy, everything is mitya or anitya, impermanent. Nonetheless, without real knowledge of Atma, the soul, such philosophers, must be bewildered and must continue to lament as sudras. Sri Sukadev Goswami therefore said to Parikit Maharaj, Shota Vidini Radendra Nrinam Shanti Sahasrasa Apashaitam Atmatattvam Griheshu Grihamerinam. Those who are materially engrossed, being blind to knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subjects for hearing in human society, O Emperor. For ordinary persons engaged in material activities, there are many subject matters to understand because such persons do not understand self-realization. One must therefore be educated in self-realization so that under any circumstances in life he will remain steady in his vows very important and very difficult to have one's mind so fixed and deep in his realization that regardless of the externals of the circumstance and according to our karma, we will all have different, Maya will trap us. Everyone has their own traps, their own weaknesses that Maya knows very well and Maya loves to exploit. But if one is very deep and determined, if one is fixed and focused on what the actual goal of life is, he will remain steady in his determination to serve Krishna, regardless of what the mind is casting before him, what Maya is placed before him. But that stage is difficult. One basically has to be free of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance to do that. But by surrender to Krishna, by steady determination, it is possible, and by chanting and prayer. If we place ourselves carefully under Krishna's protection and control constantly, kirtaniya sadhari, then it's possible. Otherwise, it's not possible. Practically speaking. So now, to give us some more instruction, there's another story that Yamaraj is telling. Hiranyakashipu is telling a story of Yamaraj, and in that story of Yamaraj, Yamaraj will tell a story to show how there's nothing to lament and how lamenting and attachment is dangerous. So he tells a story. There was once a hunter who lured birds with food and captured them after spreading a net. So you put some food on the ground and the innocent birds they're always hungry, so they want to eat the food, and then there's a net somewhere and the net falls upon the birds and they can't get out. So he lived as if appointed by death personified as the killer of the birds. While wandering the forest, the hunter saw a pair of Kulinga birds. Of the two, the female was captivated by the hunter's lure. O queens of Suyagya, the male Kalinga bird, seeing his wife put into the greatest danger in the grip of providence, became very unhappy. Imagine, because even birds are attached to each other. What should he do? Because of affection, the poor bird, being unable to release her, began to lament for his wife. Alas, how merciless is providence. My wife, unable to be helped by anyone, is in such an awkward position and lamenting for me. What will providence gain by taking away this poor bird? What will be the profit? If unkind providence takes away my wife, who is half my body, why should he not take me also? What is the use of my living with half my body bereaved by loss of my wife? What shall I gain in this way? The unfortunate baby birds bereft of their mother are waiting in the nest for her to feed them. They are still very small and have not yet grown their wings. How shall I be able to maintain them? So he's thinking like this. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport, the first half. The bird is lamenting for the mother of his children because the mother naturally maintains and cares for the children. Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for and wandering in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. Yamaraj before said this. He said, look at my situation. Don't you know that, because the queens were lamenting when their husband had died, the queens were lamenting, well, who's going to take care of us now? And Yamaraj came up and said, well, I'm just a young boy and I was left in the forest, and who's been taking care of me? It's only Krishna who takes care of anyone anyway. So Yamaraj, however, in the guise of a small boy, has already explained that although his mother left him uncared for, and wandering in the forest, the tigers and other ferocious animals had not eaten him. The real fact is that if the Supreme Personality of Godhead protects one, even though one be motherless and fatherless, one can be maintained by the goodwill of the Lord. Otherwise, if the Supreme Lord does not give one protection, one must suffer in spite of the presence of his father and mother. Another example is that sometimes a patient dies in spite of a good physician and good medicine. Thus, without the protection of the Lord, one cannot live with or without parents. So ultimately, everything depends on the Lord. The external circumstances may be favorable, they may be unfavorable, and ultimately everything depends on the Lord. Because of the loss of his wife, this is text 56, killing a bird, continues, he lamented with tears in his eyes. Meanwhile, following the dictations of mature time, the hunter, who was very carefully hidden in the distance, released his arrow, which pierced the body of the Kalinga bird and killed him. Thus Yamaraj, in the guise of a small boy, told all the queens, "You are all so foolish." This is the benefit he took the form of a small boy, because when a small boy says, "Oh, you're all so foolish," then no one gets insulted. But if an adult would say that, everyone would be very insulted. But everyone listens when a small boy talks. "You are all so foolish that you lament, but do not see your own death. Afflicted by a poor fund of knowledge, you do not know that even if you lament for your dead husband for hundreds of years, you will never get him back alive. And in the meantime, your lives will be finished." Purport. Yamaraj once asked Maharaj Yudhisthira, "What is the most wonderful thing within this world?" Maharaj Yudhisthira replied, this is from Mahabharata, "Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gachantika yamalayam, shesha stavaram mitchanti. Kimascharyam mata param." Hundreds and thousands of living entities meet death at every moment, but a foolish living being nonetheless thinks himself deathless and does not prepare for death. This is the most wonderful thing in the world. Everyone has to die, because everyone is fully under the control of material nature. Yet everyone thinks that he is independent, that whatever he likes he can do, that he will never meet death, but will live forever, and so on. So-called scientists are making various plans by which living entities in the future can live forever. But while they are thus pursuing such scientific knowledge, Yamaraj, in due course of time, will take them away from their business of so-called research. So, end of the story of the birds, end of the story of Yamaraj, now back to Hiranyakashipu speaking. Hiranyakashipu said, "While Yamaraj, in the form of a small boy, was instructing all the relatives surrounding the dead body of Suyagya, everyone was struck with wonder by his philosophical words. They could understand that everything material is temporary, not continuing to exist." I'll read from a little way down, a third of the way down in Prabhupada's purport. "Every human being should try to understand how the spirit soul can be happy and where he can attain an eternal blissful life of knowledge. Human beings are meant to study these subject matters, not to be absorbed in caring for the temporary body, which is sure to change. No one knows whether he will receive a human body again. There is no guarantee. For according to one's work, one may get anybody from that of a demigod to that of a dog. In this regard, Srimad Vacharya comments, Aham mama bhimanadi twayatotam anityakam mahadadi yatotam sha nitya chapi yatotita ashvantantraiva prakriti swatantro nityavacha yatata bhutas chapara ekaiva janardana. Only Janardhan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is ever existing. But his creation in the material world is temporary. Therefore, everyone who is captivated by the material energy and absorbed in thinking, I am this body and everything belonging to this body is mine, is in illusion. One should think only of being eternally a part of Janardhan. And one's endeavor in this material world, especially in this human form of life, should be to attain the association of Janardhan by going back home, back to Godhead. So all the queens, said Hiranyakashipu, understood that everything is temporary and they have to deal with their own eternal lives. After instructing all the foolish relatives of Suyajna, Yamaraj, in the form of a boy, disappeared from their vision. Then the relatives of King Suyajna performed the ritualistic funeral ceremonies. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu says, none of you should be aggrieved for the loss of the body, whether your own or those of others. Only in ignorance does one make bodily distinctions, thinking, who am I, what are the others, what is mine, what is for others. And then we'll read some of these last two purports. I'll read the last verse. Sri Narada Muni, who is telling this to Yudhisthira, the story of Hiranyakashipu, he continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu, along with her daughter-in-law, Rushabahu Manu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death, and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. So read some parts of the last two purports. As long as human society is in darkness and ignorance, men will continue to make huge arrangements in the bodily conception of life. This is described by Prahlad Maharaj as Bharam. In the materialistic conception, modern civilization makes enormous arrangements for huge roads, houses, mills, and factories. And this is man's conception of the advancement of civilization. People do not know, however, that at any time they themselves may be kicked out of the scene and forced to accept bodies that have nothing to do with these enormous houses, palaces, roads, and automobiles. Therefore, when Arjuna was thinking in terms of his bodily relationships with his kinsmen, Krishna immediately chastised him, saying, Kutas tva kajmalamidam vishame samopastitam manarya jushtam. This bodily conception of life is befitting the Anaryas, the non-Aryans, who are not advanced in knowledge. And then there's some Sanskrit verses. The purport is that, the Sanskrit verses are from the Brahmavavarta Purana, the purport is that as long as we are in this human form of body, our duty is to understand the soul within the body. The body is not the self. We are different from the body, and therefore there is no question of friends, enemies, or responsibilities in terms of the bodily conception of life. One should not be very anxious about the body's changing from childhood to boyhood, from boyhood to old age, and then to apparent annihilation. Rather, one should be very seriously concerned about the soul within the body and how to release the soul from the material clutches. The living entity within the body is never annihilated. Therefore, one should surely know that whether one has many friends or many enemies, his friends cannot help him, and his enemies cannot do him any harm. One should know that he is a spirit soul, aham brahmasmi, and that the constitutional position of the soul is unaffected by the changes of the body. In all circumstances, everyone as a spirit soul must be a devotee of Lord Vishnu and should not be concerned with bodily relationships, whether with friends or with enemies. One should know that neither we ourselves nor our enemies in the bodily conception of life are ever killed. And then the final purport. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, and one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smasana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God. Artha, the distressed; Jigyasu, the inquisitive; Artarthi, one who desires material gain; and Jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Especially when one is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it is an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi, for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present, whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 2nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. And the next chapter on Hiranyakashipu, plans to become immortal, begins. Hopefully we'll begin this tomorrow. It's so amazing speaking in this way. And then soon as everyone is pacified, he's going to go out and try to get revenge on Vishnu and kill him and get the power of the whole universe. So we have to try hard to also not be like that. To not be hypocrites and speak one way and act in exactly the opposite way. We should hear and speak the philosophy and let it penetrate our hearts, and pray that Krishna give us the strength to sincerely follow. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
Can I ask in a couple of these verses, there's an emphasis on the soul as being
It's emphasizing the freedom of the living entity, because if we talk about too much about our how powerful the modes of material nature and how tiny we are, then we start thinking, well, then since I have no power, I have no choice, and if I have no choice, then I just continue doing what I'm doing. Yeah, so here the emphasis is different. Interesting. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Everybody has to step through time.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a bit confused about that because some people, they, you know, that's the time is that they enter, that there is another body maybe.
Yeah, it means that it's time to go, time to die, leave the body behind and the soul goes on.
Yeah, because there is another body already or something, but maybe somebody is murdered or somebody is haunted, ghost or whatever. It's not the test of time. It is. So it's meant to be that somebody...
Yeah, that's... Although there is a concept called unnatural death or premature death, but the general principle is that the people have a certain span of life. So it's hard to tell who's old and who's young by looking at them. There may be a person who's 70 years old, and maybe he's going to live to be 94. And then there's a person who's 20 years old, and he's going to live to be 31. So who's older? If you measure one's age and how close one is to death, the person who's 20 will be older than the person who's 70. So in that sense, yeah, so everyone has a predetermined, predestined time, lifespan in the body. So therefore, since we don't know really how long we're here for, whether we're old or young, therefore we should use our time properly and carefully.
In one instance here, it says it's difficult to educate a person who's had some illusion of meditation.
Illusion, yeah.
But then, in that final verse, there's reference to the fact that when distress comes from the world.
Which verse is that one on? Lamentation? 41?
41.
49. Difficult. Those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal, whereas the body is perishable and not overwhelmed by lamentation. But persons who lack self-knowledge of self-realization certainly lament. Therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. So when the lamentation is so great and the pain is so great, one can listen at that time, and one feels, what is these, all these plans and materialistic thoughts I have? You know, death ends everything. So at that time, this smasana, you see it all the time. That it's, if you ever go to funerals or whatever, that people are very, very sober, and that they'll listen at that time. But there's other lamentations other than that very, very big and sobering one that one, that carry one in one's life, the desiring and the lamenting that carry one through one's life all day long, 24 hours a day. And when one is trapped by the lamentations and passions and desiring of life, one's truly trapped by them. It takes up one's time all continuously. But sometimes a big lamentation comes in and cracks our plans, because we have a dream, we fantasize. It's interesting to do this, because watch your mind. In one hour, how many fantasies go through your mind and dreams? Well, you can't do it for an hour, it's too long, but try it for, in 10 minutes, you'll see, if you watch your mind at all, how many fantasies will go on. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I should have said this, and I want that, and this person has done this, and all that, on and on and on. It's insane, is what it actually is. You can't describe it in any other way. It's completely crazy. Because if a sober person is, he's living in the world. He's living in reality. And a person who's living in illusion is mad, and illusion means you're living in a world that doesn't exist, and that's what we do all day long. Living in the future, living in the past, just completely fantasizing in illusion, in a dream world.
In regards to that, in this book by Napoleon Hill called Think and Grow Rich, I read it some time back, he says if a person constantly dwells in his dreams like that, that's a prerequisite to become really, really successful in his philosophy. This is the people that he has researched.
No, that's true. Desires, Krishna reciprocates with those desires as the super soul.
Then you take the next step, see where that, what that thing going to lead into.
See, according to how we desire in this fantasy world that we're living in, the universe reciprocates with that by Krishna's grace. It's true. So we have to be very, very careful about what we desire. So those desires, they are a different level of illusion. Too. We want to manifest them tangibly, so we're thinking like that. But even aside from that, you watch your mind for 15 minutes and see how many illusions and dreams and fantasies you have that you're not, don't want to become true. It's not, because if all our desires were fulfilled, probably there wouldn't be anyone left in the world. And everything, and we get angry at someone and suddenly a whole village is killed. You know, something like that. All day long, you know, it's crazy. Actually, it's crazy. It's a whole illusory world that we have going on inside. Okay, let's stop now. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.